Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldaya.
It's been a while, freedom child.
All right, Sally, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So we've got a big conversation today, a big story to come through you today. And I first just want to, just acknowledge your courage and your, I want to appreciate your willingness to share this story with me, and then by extension with many, many, many other women who will hear this with great honor and appreciation as well. So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having this platform. It's been such an inspiration for me and such a big strength for me having, you know, community. So thank you.
Where should we begin?
I think like the journey started with my son Casper. My birth with him really shaped a lot of my beliefs about birth and just completely remolded everything I know about the health system and the medical system. And obviously I've listened to so many podcasts on your platform and have heard that it's not uncommon for women to go through something similar that I went through. So I got pregnant with Casper, and me and my partner were over the moon. I was working full time then. I was running my restaurant at the time, and I didn't really drop into the birth I thought I was, but I wasn't really. And I think, like, I was a first-time mom. I had one other friend that had a kid, and I had never even really heard about free birth, but I knew that I wanted, like, very, very low intervention. I wanted to birth at home. I wanted to do it all naturally. And that was kind of like the end of it. Like, I didn't think that it was going to be such a huge transformation process. And that's really what I see the birth space as, is like labor transforms the maiden to the mother. And yeah, so I was pregnant with Casper. My pregnancy, I just was working. I didn't really change anything. I was super, super healthy. We had one scan, and I didn't even think about it. It was just like, I'm pregnant, let's go get a scan. And we went and got a scan, and I remember walking out and just being like, that really didn't feel right. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of started thinking about our birth plan. And I knew that I wanted a doula, and I wasn't sure what to do about a midwife. And in my area, they have a birthing program that's free and it's through the system, but a midwife from the system comes to your house for your home birth. And I was like, oh my God, that's so amazing that we've got that. Wow. Okay, cool. That's what we're going to do. And yeah. Lo and behold, it was not a good decision. So during that time with Caspar, when I was pregnant, every single appointment that I had at the hospital, and the hospital in Byron is pretty small. It's not this big. There's way bigger hospitals in our area. Like they don't do any surgeries or anything there. It's like a very chill hospital, and everyone gets relocated when it's something really urgent. So going to the hospital didn't feel too crazy for me, but every single time that I went, I had a different midwife. And that was kind of like a big red flag, but I just had this like good girl mentality and didn't want to like be difficult and was just like, I'm just going to go along with it. And I only met my midwife that I was birthing with 2 weeks before my birth. And I got along with her just fine, but I didn't connect with her other than the service she was providing me. And she kind of like, well, along the journey, one of the midwives was like, okay, go and have your 22-week scan. And I went into that ultrasound. First of all, I'm not sure of the technical term that ultrasound person is called. Is it a
technician?
A technician. So she was adamant that I have a vaginal scan or a vaginal ultrasound. What? And I was like,
22 weeks?
So weird, right? And I was like, no, I just don't really, like, I don't want that. And she pushed and pushed and pushed and was like, you like, and then she did the belly one and was like, look, you really need to have like the vaginal one because I'm not getting this read. So I was like,
you know, oh, what it sounds okay. Like it sounds like she wanted some practice.
Totally. So I'm on the bed, she did the vaginal ultrasound, which was so uncomfortable. I hated every second of it. And then she was like, oh, I still can't find it. We're gonna have to like, I don't know. It was just, and I walked out of there and I was just like, what was that? Like, it felt really yucky. So yeah, that really tainted my ultrasound experience. And so I met my final midwife before birth in Caspar. And everything was fine, but I just, like, in hindsight, I reflect on everything that they, the tools that they were giving me were all just to try and regulate my pain. Like, that was it. There was no, like, spiritual education. There was no, like, it was just so bland and like, okay, like the TEMS machine, you need this. These are your pressure points. These are the positions. So for me, I just thought I was going into like a marathon basically, and I was going to use all these tools to keep going. And that's honestly kind of like what happened in my birth. I went into labor. It was just me and my partner at home. It was really soft at the start, and I remember thinking like, oh, I really want to go for a walk. And I messaged my midwife and was like, oh, I really want to go for a walk. And she said, no, lie down because I have a birth tonight and I don't want you to get your labor going. You just lie down and rest.
Whoa, yeah. Keep your legs together, little lady.
Yeah. Whoa, so then gross. And I was just, you know, I just kind of was like, okay, yeah, like just went along with it. So I laid down all day on my side. And that night things really picked up and my contractions were really strong and really close together. And I think we called her at about 4 and she came and my partner set up the pool. And as soon as she walked in, she basically said, like, something's wrong. She was like, your contractions aren't timed correctly. I think I should check you. And it was just that immediate feeling of like something's not right. So that was the first kind of like, that was the first impression I got of her coming into my birth space. So I'm just like, something's wrong. Like something is like, what's wrong? And she left and I was laboring in the pool and she's tried to stop me getting in the pool. And I was just like, I'm getting in the pool. Like, yeah, it was just an absolute mess basically. So earlier in, it was about 6:37 a.m., another midwife came out because she had left to go home and rest.
So something's wrong, and then she leaves to rest.
She said that because my contractions weren't timed correctly.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and she was like, you know, just keep working through it. I'm going to go home and rest, and I'm going to get someone else to come and replace me.
Epic. Like, so I'm going to come in and, like, shit all over your birth, freak you out, fuck up your
and
head,
then bail.
And then bounce, because I need to sleep. That shit is so unethical. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so she leaves, this other woman comes in, and like as soon as she walked in, I was like, I really don't like this woman. Ooh. She was like really, really harsh, like no softness whatsoever. And she was like, I think you should come to the birth suite so we can monitor you. We've got, you know, a big pool there, blah, blah, blah. And at that time, I was just like, okay, like it was just like, I was just so compliant. I was like, yeah. And she was like, you know, why don't you come in? I'll see if we can give you a little bit of like pain relief and like see how you go at the birth suites. So we get in the car, we get to the birth suites. Like as soon as I got into the birth suites, I was like, there's absolutely no way I'm birthing here. Like fluorescent lights. It was so cold. Like,
but they call it a birth suite, Sally. Isn't it nice and warm and friendly?
No, it was like honestly horrible. And they, because I had vomited a fair bit, they gave me a drip, and the drip was so cool. Like I was convulsing in this bed. I was absolutely freezing. So we were there for like 10 hours, and then I just knew I wasn't going to birth there. So the midwife that came to our house, the one I didn't like, said, look, I'm just going to lie you down. I'm going to give you a check. And she gave me a sweep without consent and broke my waters. And after that, it was just like the pain was so, like, it was unmanageable for me. And my actual midwife comes back in. So they kind of swap out. And she was like, I think you should go to hospital and have an epidural and just rest, and you'll be able to wake up from your rest and push your baby out. So
that's so evil.
We go to the hospital.
That's so evil. They're selling you a home birth. They don't give a shit about first-time moms. They already think that first-time moms can't do it. She's exhausted. Like every part of them is stacked against you. It's just so, it's really crazy what a lie it is, and that it is the system that is what everyone's interacting with around almost the entire planet. Like, it's so wrong.
Yeah, and, you know, I really do try and have, like, respect for people in their field, but the lack of trust, like, is crazy. And at one point when we were walking through the car park to the birth suites and I'm in labor, a friend that I know walked past me and was like, hey, babe. And I was like, oh, I'm in labor. And she was like, no. And like that energy hit me and I was like, oh, that's what I need. And then I just went straight into the birth suites and it was like the complete opposite. And I was like, can't someone just tell me that I'm like doing good, you know? And like, bless my partner, is like so unbelievably supportive. He's my absolute rock. But like, he had no idea what was going on. He thought something was wrong. Like, we were just listening to this narrative and was like, okay, we need to go to hospital to like save our child. So we go to hospital. I get the epidural, and which was fine. Like, in, you know, I didn't have any, there was no damage or anything like that. And they, when he get, when the obstetrician came in, well, sorry, the obstetrician came in, and Casper's heart rate had dropped. Like, I think the midwife said it was like 0.1%. It was like a very, very low heart rate drop. And when that happened, it was like the alarms went on. And like five people rush in, and there's this obstetrician standing there, and he was on the phone. He gets off the phone and he goes, okay, you've got the green light for a cesarean. And this was like 10 minutes of us being there. And I just looked at him and I was like, no. And he rolled his eyes and looked at the other like obstetricians and doctors and said, well, we all want to go home early tonight.
What? Oh my God.
Yeah.
You are in a hellscape. This is a torture chamber hellscape. Oh my God.
Yeah. So we're like, I'm lying there thinking, and then he like said, like, you know, if you don't have a cesarean, like, your baby could die.
Oh my God.
And after he left, like, I was so upset. I was like, oh my God, have we made the wrong choice? But I was like, I'm not having a cesarean. And I knew instinctively that Casper was fine. And I turned to the midwife that was on our table, table. And she was like, oh, you didn't need a cesarean. Like, you made the right choice. And I asked her, I was like, you know, what happens when the heart rate drops? And she's like, oh, it's so normal. She was like, you know, most children have that heart rate drop when you've just had a massive dose of like, you know, relaxant into your system. She's like, it's totally normal. Like, your baby's fine. So it was just like, yeah. Anyway, so
that's like psychological warfare.
Yeah. And like, for him to say, but we all want to go home early tonight, it's like, you're about to cut me open
and risk your life.
And like, yeah, it's just like the, yeah. And then, no joke, it was like we kind of rested for 3 hours, but my partner went to the toilet and the obstetrician cornered him to try and get him to convince me to have the cesarean. It was just like, I could not believe it. But at the time, it was just like, how do you even process that, like, as it's happening, you know? So I'm lying on the bed. The midwife that was now with us was actually so beautiful. She was so caring and tender, very, very hands-off, like, didn't touch me without my consent. She was actually, like, she saved that whole scenario.
Well, she's hands off now that you are drugged and strapped down. Like, I'm sorry, like, no, fuck that. You know, like, the standards are so low. The fact that she, like, wasn't horrifically threatening you, you know, like, damn.
Yeah. So she, like, it comes time to push. It was all, like, very, like, push, push, push. Like, I pushed Casper out in, like, I think it was like half an hour, and I don't know what happened, but I was really adamant that I didn't want the epidural even. And the midwife that was on, I don't know if she stopped like giving me juice, but I could feel his head come out. I had a lot of feeling even after he came out. Like, I could move my legs and I could walk within 5 minutes. So that it was nice to be able to feel that experience and not be completely numb. But as soon as Casper came out, there was like a little bit of meconium, and he's on my chest and he's crying. And like, there was like a little gurgle in his in his cry. So it's like alarms on. They come and grab him off me. They're plugging him with oxygen. Then I'm lying there watching that happen, and this woman comes up to me, not the midwife, a different woman, and jabs me in the side of my leg with Pitocin. Is that right? Yeah. With Pitocin, and like grabs my umbilical cord and yanks my placenta out straight into a medical waste bin. And like I was lying there just like,
wow.
I just couldn't even gross. Like it's so hard to, like you're in labor and then you're also processing something like deeply traumatic, but you don't know it's traumatic yet because you don't know anything else. Like it's just like, yeah.
If you are like most of my listeners, you are devouring these episodes and you're probably wishing that you could speak to the women that come on this show, learn from them, even get to know them in real life, right? Well, I would like to invite you into my inner circle. It's called The Lighthouse. The Lighthouse is my highly exclusive online membership, and it's where most of the women on this podcast are hanging out. It's by far the best social media platform on the internet. It's highly curated by yours truly, and our team personally vets every single member coming in to ensure the highest caliber community imaginable. I'm talking a full feed of free birth announcements every day, engaging and intellectual conversation about everything taboo under the sun, a ton of group calls every month to connect and be in circle, not to mention the now 7-year-old matriarch search engine that will quickly replace your Google searching. We only open our doors 4 times a year, and half that time we only open it to those on the wait list. Add your name to the list in the show notes below and consider taking your place among us brilliant, sovereign, wild women, because it's just simply better when we're all together. See you on the inside, sis. When you need guidance from someone you can truly trust, someone who aligns with your values of sovereignty and natural living, look no further than Dr. Jennifer Tice. Dr. Jen's expertise in homeopathy and naturopathic family care is unmatched. She is my personal go-to when I need an opinion on how to best support my family and myself when we are healing. And something I'm always telling everyone about, Dr. Jen runs a very specific food intolerance test. Having this information has quite literally changed my life once I decided to take it seriously. Knowing what our specific foods were to avoid has radically improved the health of myself and my children. So if you're looking to uplevel your health, head over to drjennifertice.com and you can find her on Instagram at Dr. Jennifer Tice.
So they then take Casper to the nursery, or the nursery. Tom's with him, and I'm like the crazy woman. I'm like, I'm going to my child. So I get up and like there's blood coming out, and I'm like, get me in a wheelchair, take me to him now. They wheel me into the room with Casper, and Tom's holding his hand, and he is so plugged in. Like there's like, you know, I looked at him and I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, when did this happen? Like,
God.
And the midwife goes, you can't breastfeed him because he's on a glucose drip. No consent of any of that. And I was just like, what do you mean? She was like, well, we need to like wean him off the glucose before you can breastfeed him. And I touched him and he, no joke, ripped everything off. Like ripped his oxygen off, tried, like he was just, he knew. And then I was just like, I'm breastfeeding my child. And she was like, oh, well, I guess you can now because he's not plugged in. And as soon as I grabbed him and put him on my boob and he started breastfeeding, like I watched all of his like things on the monitor just perfect. And it was just like, even in that, I was like, why are you giving him glucose when like my boobs are right here, like I'm ready to breastfeed him. So we dealt with all of that. We were in the hospital for like 12 hours and every single minute of that was us trying to get out. But I was also trying to be respectful of the nature of And it got to the end and this obstetrician was like, oh, I just need to do like his eye test. And they just wanted to, first of all, they wanted him on antibiotics for 24 hours. We said no. Vitamin K, we said no. The death threats, like you could kill your baby. Like it was just like intense, really intense. So we finally got him out of there, and the last obstetrician that wanted to test his eyes, I cried to him and was like, I just don't want anyone else to touch him. And he actually saw me in that moment and was like, okay, like I'm not going to do this eye test. I'm just going to write down that his eyes were fine and you can go home. I'm like, I'm pretty sure if there's something wrong with his eyes in a couple of days, if it's like serious, I'll come back. Like you don't need to flash a torch in his eyes. So that was pretty much Casper's birth. Yeah, really, really full on. And I don't think I even realized the extent of like how traumatic it was until I got pregnant again. And just realized that, well, and then I, you know, I found Free Birth Society and I was just like, wow, like thank God you are doing what you do, because yeah, my experience was just absolutely horrible in the system. And yeah, still is really horrible in the system. So I guess that kind of leads to, yeah, I was like 9 months later, I had like one period and got pregnant again. and yeah, that my pregnancy with the twins was so different. Like I was so present. I really pulled out of like, well, what I thought I was doing was pulling back from work and like limiting that kind of grinding hustle that I am really accustomed to. And yeah, that pregnancy just completely transformed me. I knew from the moment I fell pregnant that I wanted to free birth. And I started meditating. I was going to birth circles. And, you know, the community in my area is just amazing for free birth. I went to a 3-day birth retreat on Sovereign Birth. And yeah, I had never felt so healthy and so full of life. And it was just an amazing 9 months, honestly. And there was like one part of me that was like, there's a birth keeper in my area that's just, she's incredible. And I was really drawn to her. And I kept kind of like going back and forth and meditating and asking my babies. And the answer was from them that all they needed was me. Every time I meditated, I was like, you know, what do I need for the birth? Like what? And every single time I was like, we just need you. So
did you have a sense that was it obvious to you there were two?
Never.
Okay.
And it's so interesting because like I was going to a chiropractor every week. I was doing kinesiology. I was doing acupuncture. I like every single person that touched me or was in my field that was a healer or an energy worker or a practitioner all said there's one. And it must have been the way that they were sitting. I only ever felt one set of kicks, and I'm so attuned with my body. And I was big, but I was so big with Casper that everyone was just like, oh, second time round, you're so much bigger, you know. And after birthing them, they were very, very different sizes, which is like the common kind of factor of the condition that they had. So Yeah, I don't, I like, it's just a mystery. I don't know if Melvin, like, maybe one of them never really kicked because of the way that they were in their sacks. Like, I just don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I never, sometimes I would be like, oh, like, you know, if there's, what if there's twins? But it just didn't even, like, it actually didn't even bother me. I was like, if there's twins, there's twins, you know? I just had so much trust and so much faith in my body. And, you know, we went back and forth about getting a birth keeper or not. And in the end, like, my partner and I just had such a strong connection to our birth keeper that, like, it felt so right to have her in the space. And yeah, so I get to, like, I think I was, yeah, it was 36 weeks, and I was like setting up my second restaurant at the time, and it was pretty exhausting. And that's like an understatement. It was absolutely exhausting. And I pretty much like finished up there to go on maternity leave, and I had 2 days of not working and then went into labor.
Oh, that's hard.
And it's just the way that it was. Yeah, I mean, I don't look back and want to change anything, but I definitely, if I ever go through pregnancy again, like, it's going to be even more different and like more pulled back. So yeah, I went into labor. It was like 7 p.m. and I knew that kind of week, I was like, something, I feel like something is opening. Just energetically, I felt really out of it. I could just feel that I was going to go into labor soon. And I would have been like, I think I would have been like 36 and 6, but I was never 100% sure, obviously, of my due date. And because I only had that one, the first bleed that I had, sorry, I had two bleeds, but they were both really light and they were 2 weeks apart. And I think that was just my body like recovering, but I was never sure if that second bleed was like spotting from my yeah, it was all like, I didn't know. So I went into labor, my waters broke, and I knew my waters were going to break the whole pregnancy. I was like, my waters are going to, so my waters broke at like 8 p.m. My partner set up the pool and then went to sleep with my son. And it was just really light to begin with, and I was just like cruising through it. And then it picked up at about 10 and I put myself in the bath, and then it like really picked up and I felt like I was in a psychedelic trip. I was using my voice. I was just in a state that was so different to my first labor. I was just so in it. I absolutely loved every second of it. The pain was so different. It was like I could really feel it transforming me. And then I like vomited, and I knew, like, I could have kept vomiting, but I stopped and was like, no, I've got this. And even just that, like, yeah, I feel like when you spew in labor, it's like a real, like, you're purging all of that fear. You can either keep purging or you can be like, no, I've got this. And I really felt that energy of like, no, I've got this. I'm not going to keep vomiting. Like, I'm just going to get back into the labor. And then my partner came in and helped me out of the bath. And we went into the living room where the pool was set up. And I like laid on the couch for like one contraction. And then I just remember saying to him, which is like the classic, I was like, I don't want to do this. And he looked at me and was like, yes, you do. And I was like, yeah, I do. So I got in the pool and I was lying on the couch and I just all of a sudden my body was hinging and I was grunting and I was oh my God, I need to push. And I couldn't even believe how quick that time was. It was a couple of hours. And so I got in the pool and all the pain just dissipated. And I felt the contraction and it honestly felt amazing. And I had this kind of mantra almost from a woman. A woman kind of said it in one of my birth circles. And she said, instead of every single contraction being how can I get out of this? It was she said, when I've had contractions, I said, how good can I make it? So every contraction, I was how good can I make this contraction? And the last contraction, I could feel Dusty's head coming out. I felt the ring of fire. And then it was almost my body did what it needed to do. And my back just arched and Dusty just came flying out. And he was very, very alive, screaming. He was small, but not too small. I've seen, I don't know what he weighed. There's so much mystery in this. So he was very, very alive. And I was just holding him in the birth pool. There was music playing. It was just everything was dripping. It was beautiful. And then I could feel my contractions were still really strong and I felt inside because I instinctively, that's just what I wanted to do. And I could feel what I thought was a placenta. It was very, very soft, kind of jelly-like. And I was okay, cool. That's my placenta. And I was holding Dusty and I was kind of trying to push while I was sitting down and I was no, this isn't happening. And that's when my birth keeper walked in and I barely even noticed her. And she came in and I was in my own world and she was why don't you try kind of leaning forward and squatting a little bit to help the placenta come out. So I did that and I put my leg up on the side of the pool and she was I turned around to her and I was is it my placenta? And she said, it's another head. And I the shock of that and it's so hard to process when it's happening. And just one more little push and Melvin came out. And at that point, my birth keeper was in the pool and I kind of tried to scoop him up, but they both had quite short cords. So it was really awkward. And she got into the pool and was holding him and he was completely stillborn. And it almost when I looked at him, it was almost I was looking at him. It was so hard to connect with him, in all honesty. And I've spoken to him from, in different ways. And he's, it's all forgiven and there's no, it was all just meant to be. But it was so hard to connect with him. He was so white. He was almost this fluorescent moon. And he was so much bigger than Dusty, which it was just whoa, what is happening? And my birth keeper and I were in the pool. And I just felt this really strong contraction for my placenta. And I was holding Dusty and Dusty started to, the first thing that you do when a baby starts to not be fully there is you always think it's the breathing. But I was in, like, I was holding him and looking at him, and I just knew that it wasn't his breathing. It was something else. It was like his life force was starting to go. And my birth keeper was, you know, like, hey, let's focus on him. So I was really trying to give him all of my energy. But at the same time, I was like, I need to birth my placenta because it was so strong, the contractions. And she said, okay, let's just stay squatting in the water and keep him in the water, keep him warm, like try and like just really connect with him. And in the next contraction, my placenta came out and I was holding him. And as soon as my placenta left my body, he basically like went limp. Wow. It was like an indescribable moment, but it was like the energy that I felt was pure peace. It was not... I wasn't like, there was no emergency feeling. It was just this, like, this, it was like, it was, I can't describe it. It was like a very, very spiritual, holy moment where we were in this portal of life and death at the same time. And after he went limp, it's kind of all really murky. My partner called the ambulance and Dusty was still like, he had like what, you know, the medical term is he had electricity in his body. So he was still stuttering a little bit and he was still like making tiny little gasps. And it was so hard for me because I was in such a state of bliss and all my body wanted me to do was sit and like connect with him and be in that moment. But, you know, my partner called the ambulance. They arrived in 8 minutes. So they arrived pretty much as I was getting out of the pool. I couldn't have been there like any faster. And like in that time,
did you want him to call the ambulance?
It was like once Melvin was born, my stillborn, my birth keeper was like, I think we should call the ambulance. And my partner just grabbed the phone and called the ambulance. Like it, I didn't like, you just, I don't know. You just, that's just what happened. She made the call and I agreed with her. I didn't know. I thought there was still an opportunity to save my son's life. And in that moment, that's just what you do. But like having the knowledge that I have now, like I hope that every mom, and I know this is so like, it seems dark, but it's so important to have a death plan. Because as soon as those ambulances arrived, like, everything was fucked, basically. They came in, all the lights went on. And then they just, like, it was like they were in slow-mo. Like, I don't even know what was happening. They just were unpacking all this stuff, like, really slow. And my birth keeper was like, hey, like, come on, like, trying to get them going. And then they, like, I'm holding Dusty and I'm like, he needs oxygen. Like, that's when it kind of started, like, you know, and I'm like, he really needs oxygen. And they went to Melvin and started trying to resuscitate him. And my birth keeper was like, she literally was like, what are you doing? It's the wrong child. Like, it was just like, I don't know. And then they basically like gave Dusty oxygen and we're like, okay, we need to put him in the ambulance. So I left and like I didn't even say goodbye to Melbourne. And that was just how it happened. Like, I didn't have a choice. So I was in the ambulance, and thank God I was shut off from everything else that was happening, because my partner had to be in the house with ambulance and cops, and it was really, really not nice or sacred. It was actually disgusting. They called 5 ambulances and 5 cops, and they blocked the entire street off.
What?
My birth keeper was like, hey, like, I think we should bring the other twin into the ambulance. Like, you know, energetically, they need to be together. They need to be with the placenta. And they just looked at her like, you're crazy. They tried to. So I was walking with Dusty into the ambulance, and I was holding him in the ambulance, and I could feel like tiny little flickers of life still in him. And I was like, he needs a blanket. Like, it was freezing. And they just took even so long to even just like get me a blanket. And like, I'm in this ambulance, and one of the workers was like, okay, you need to put him on the bed. And I was like, I can't let go of him because I know he's going to go. She was like, you need to put him in the bed. And as soon as he left my body, that was the last moment of life that he had. And then they tried to separate me from him. They told me I couldn't even be in the ambulance with him. And my birth keeper, like, just had my back. She was like, she is staying in the ambulance with her son. So then I went up to the hospital, and they worked on Dusty for like another hour. And then the doctor came over and said, you know, he's had electricity in his body, but like, he's officially not going to make it. So then we were in the hospital for hours holding him and giving him love. And
so your husband came and met you. They took Melvin.
So Melvin was still at the house, and like, even like my partner had Melvin the whole time. He was sitting on the couch holding him the whole time. And like, my partner like went to put him down, and the cops were like, you can't touch him, he's evidence.
Oh.
And Tom was like, my partner was like, I'm touching my child. And then he went to go like get me clothes, because my birth keeper was like, you know, Sal needs clothes. He went to get me clothes, brought the clothes back out, went back to like hold Melvin again. Again, you can't touch him. He's, you know, you can't. They even tried to stop him from getting me clothes. Like, it was just ridiculous. And so we're in the hospital, and the detectives, they have to put detectives on every, you know, every childbirth. They treat it, you know, very seriously. And the detectives went to our house and then came and met us at hospital and said, you know, you guys aren't under investigation. There's no case here. It's like dropped. There's no suspicion. We just need to get a statement off you in the next couple of days. But like, this is just a tragedy. So, yeah.
And that happened on the day.
So, and then we kind of had to say goodbye to Dusty, and we went home. Thanks. And, you know, obviously we were in a deep, deep grieving state. And then it was like, I think it was like 2 days later, it got leaked to the press. And
do you know how?
Like, it was one of the ambulance workers.
Motherfucker.
Yeah. And it's just like, when you like, for me, I'm such a, like, unsystemized person. I really don't, like, I don't go to the doctors. You know, I only go to the doctors when it's, like, really urgent. I'm supernatural. I'm, you know, I try and just live a very holistic life. And the fact that, like, you lean on the medical system to support you in a time of, like, what seems like crisis, and they go and fucking leak your story with so much misinformation. Like, first of all, they said Byron Bay. Like, we don't even live in Byron Bay. So they're using, like, that town to make out that we're, like, you know.
Yeah, hippie.
And, yeah, and then it was, like, they said that I was 26 weeks pregnant.
That's weird.
And that I was, yeah. The story was, the first,
in a way, that's better.
Right? I was like when the first story came out, I was like, this isn't even about us.
Right.
Like, 26 weeks pregnant. Like, why would I have a birth pool set up at 26 weeks pregnant? You know what I mean? Like, just the fact that they just guessed that. And then it's like they said I was 26 weeks pregnant and had twins and they died because I refused to get an ultrasound.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, and it was like, first of all, how do you know I'm 26 weeks pregnant if I refuse to get an ultrasound? Like, it just doesn't even, your story doesn't even make sense. So that was kind of circulating.
Yeah, let me follow that timeline. So you said 2 days later, it got leaked to the press. Does that imply that 2 days later, something was published?
Yeah.
So within 48 hours of you losing your babies, you become aware of an article in your community. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I was really, like, I didn't put any energy into it, honestly. I really tried to shut it out. So the first, it kind of happened in stages. Like, the first articles that came out didn't name us. And I really try, like, the first article that came out, I almost laughed at it. I was like, this is a joke. And then it kind of, like, manifested. And after a week, I had people messaging me being like, you know, put your Instagram on private. And I was like, what the hell is going on? Because I just wasn't fully aware of how explosive it was. And then it was probably, I think it was 2 weeks after, we had all of the major news channels trying to get in touch with us. And this one woman messaged me on Facebook asking for a statement. And I said, like, no, I'm like, anyway, she, that very next day, leaked our names with all of our information and our photo. And that's when it felt really scary. And, like, just got so nasty, and I really was trying to, you know, not kind of take it in, but, like, just some of the things that people were saying, it was like, you know, I look at that and I'm just like, you've got to own that you said that, because that's disgusting that you would shame a mother that's just lost two children, like, weeks after she's just lost them. And yeah, I saw the lowest of low through that process. But yeah, it was, yeah, there was all the media stuff, and then we really, really battled with the coroners. When the newspaper article got leaked with our names and our photos, So the coroners initially called us and said, we're not going to do autopsies. Like, we're just going to send them home from the hospital, which was the biggest, like, we just thought that was normal. We were like, okay, beautiful. Like, we're going to get them back. We had found an incredible death doula. She's has a funeral service here, but it's like, it's not, it's just so Oh, it's incredible. She wraps them in paper bark and her space is like this beautiful adorned like womb. Yeah, she really made the very final process really amazing, despite everything we went through with the coroners. So it was a couple of days later they said the boys are coming back to you. And then it was almost in correlation with the newspaper articles circulating more and more that she called us. And the woman that we were speaking to was just like the admin woman. She wasn't the one making the decisions. And she was as nice as she could possibly be. But like, I still kind of think she's a bit evil for what happened to us. So she called us and said, oh, they want to autopsy Dusty. Melvin's stillborn. And we looked into, we were like, okay, like why? And she was like, oh, I can try and find out, you know, an answer, blah, blah, blah. It was all really vague. And then she called us back a couple of days later and said, they want to autopsy both of them. And we said, like, why? What's the reason? And she said, the reason is health and safety of society. And we said, what does that mean? And she said, oh, it's just to give the paramedics feedback. And we knew in our hearts, like, that we didn't want our children to be autopsied. So we kind of were back and forth with her and were asking, like, our options, like, you know, can we say no to this? And she said, the only way that you can oppose an autopsy is in the Supreme Court. And even if you win, they can still do it. So we just had to surrender to that's what was going to happen. And it was like on the Friday, we spoke to our death doula and she said, call them and try and get non-incisions. They can do a scan. So we called her straight away and said, and she said to us, you know, I'll call you one final time and make sure that you, because you, we could still go to court. And we weren't going to do that.
Why is no one telling you to get a lawyer?
Oh, it was all like the system here, like when we spoke to this admin woman and said to her, like, you know, what's the process if we actually go to court? She said, they can still do it. Like, there's no, like, it's just the way it works.
Well, of course they can.
I was talking.
But that's.
Yeah.
That's of course what someone opposing you, who's coercing you to do something you don't want, is going to say. Like, I'm not even really saying this at you. I'm saying this at anyone who's going to learn, you know, anything, you know, if they ever have to interact with this stuff, like, get a fucking lawyer. I don't care where you live, get a fucking lawyer, because at the very least, it will show them that you mean business, that you will not be pushed around, yeah, and that they better be crossing their T's and dotting their I's, and they need to come correct. And 9 times out of 10, when I've seen parents do that, they back off. You never hear from them again. I am devastated that that's not your story. But for anyone who ever might find themselves in this impossible situation, you know, like, of course they say, oh, I'm so angry. Okay. So then what happens?
So I think it was like, I don't know, we were like grieving, we're dealing with the media, and then we've got this like woman from the coroner's calling us every single day, telling us something new that they've, you know, going to do to our kids. And like, so we, I called her on Friday right before they closed and I said, you know, is there a possibility to get scans instead of incisions? And she said, look, I'll call you back on Monday and I'll let you know if that's a possibility. But if the coroner decides that there needs to be an autopsy, like, it's almost like trying to fight if someone thinks that you're guilty of a murder. Like, you can't, like, you have to go to the extremes to prove your innocence. Like, the same with this. It's like, if they decide, like, we were broken, you know, like, my mum was going through defamation lawyers in Sydney trying to have our photo removed. Like, it was just, there was just so much going on. And I call her Monday and she ignored me. I was calling the office, trying to get through. This other woman kept saying, oh, she'll call you back. I finally get through to her Monday afternoon and I was like, look, did you end up seeing if they could not do incisions? And she said, oh, they've already done it. So we processed that. And then she said, look, they'll probably be back within like a week or two. We just need to do the paperwork. A couple of days later, she calls us again and says, their tests are inconclusive. They didn't find anything. And they now want to autopsy their brains. And my death doula said that she had dealt with many child births and she had never experienced them wanting to ever do a brain autopsy on any child. And at that point, we were like, we're going to court. Like, we can't have this happen to them. And, like, when I say that I begged them, like, I begged. And I said to this woman on the phone, can you please just ask the coroner? Like, please, we don't want this to happen. And I think I was at a point with the all of this stuff that I said to my partner, like, I can't talk to the coroners anymore. Like, you're going to have to talk, like, my body, like, there was so much, like, going on. And he took over that and he started to, so at the coroners, they have someone that works in the legal department that sets up your court case and can advise you on how to kind of go forward with opposing it. So he was speaking to them on the phone and they said, so like, this is the whole process, blah, 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 blah. And he said, okay, yeah, like we definitely don't want their brains to be autopsied. And the woman goes, oh, they've already done that. You can just oppose them sending the samples away. And like, yeah, it was just thing after thing after thing. And yeah, wow. So just that whole, yeah, it was like, honestly, like the most torturous process I've ever been through in my life, having to deal with that. And then we had to wait. So all of this happened in the first like 2.5 weeks and we didn't get them back until 47 days later. And our death doula found that the hospital didn't do the paperwork properly, that they were all held up, that, you know, she said to us, you know, I think this is discrimination against you guys for free birthing, for, you know, me and my partner, we're both heavily tattooed. He's a tattooist. Like, we're weirdos. Like, we stand out. And I just, yeah, she just said, like, she's never seen anything like this before. But a part of me just can't play into it anymore. It's just like, I don't see the point. I'm just like, the only way that I can win is by like sharing like this. And, you know, like the whole pivot of everything for me comes down to like a couple of days after the birth, I had a friend come over, well, a sister come over and give me a womb massage. And she can speak to the other side. And I didn't know this before she massaged me. And halfway through the massage, she was like crying a lot. And we finished up and she said, look, I can access the other side. And they were coming through so strong through your body. And They wanted me to tell you that they were never meant to be two. They were always one soul. They were always one person. And they had lived many lives and they were just here to end a cycle. And they were so grateful that I carried them and that they were just here to show us more love. And when you have like divine messages like this, like that's my truth. Like, it's not that I didn't have an ultrasound or I didn't do X, Y, and Z. It's like, yeah, when you know this like greater kind of meaning, like everything else is just like what ifs. And my birth keeper, like, no joke, like the day after that I got those messages, I called her and was like, I need to share this with her because, you know, we are now like so soul sisters. You know, she came to the hospital, she waited for us, like she was there through everything with us. And, you know, we've both been like, our lives have been dramatically altered together. And I called her and told her what my friend had said. And she couldn't believe it because she had a breathwork session that same day and received the same messages. And yeah, like it's just all the media, all of the coroners, like when I come back to that truth, it's just like, you know, that's what I live with now. Like that's where I kind of sit with all of it. So yeah, that's pretty much like the whole operations of the story. And I've had such a huge life shift. Like everything's changed for me. I am like just living so slow and so in connection with my son, and my psychic portal is just completely blown open. And like all of the crap in the world, all of the media and all of that like very low vibrational human interaction, like that means so little to me now. Like, yeah, and it sucks that, like, it sucks so much that this is my story, because it's not easy. It's been very, very, very challenging, but there's just so much love and light on the other side for me. And in a way, like, I'm so grateful for them choosing me. And I don't, like, I don't know what I would have done if I had have gotten a scan. Like, if I had have gone down a different path, the options would have been very, 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 very medicated.
What do you think the scan would have shown?
So the boys had a condition called TTTS, which is a really rare condition where twins share the same blood vessels on the placenta, and they were both in their own sacs, but because they share the blood vessels, they take nutrients and blood from the placenta at different rates, and they grow at different rates. So they were like very, very different sizes, and it means that one twin basically becomes the donor and one twin becomes the like receiver. And like they rely on each other to live. So the only way to, I guess, like solve this problem is with laser surgery on your placenta to separate the blood vessels and reattach it to the placenta. It's like, whoa. Yeah, even just saying it, it's like so crazy. And like once that happens, like if I had have gotten a ultrasound and gone down that road, like I would have been in hospital every week getting a scan. It has such a high fatality rate. And even when they do that operation, I think it's like a very, very high risk that one or both twins will have either like cardiac or respiratory or bladder issues.
If you had gotten a scan, which you weren't going to do, but even if you had and you had been given this information, like, do you really think you would have done the crazy ass sci-fi surgery?
No, I wouldn't have, but I don't know what I would have done. Like, if I had have gone down the free birth route, then I would have had this knowing that, like, my pregnancy would have been so stressful, knowing that my boys have a really high fatal condition, you know, like, and like my pregnancy was the opposite of that. It was the most like life filled I've ever felt, you know, and I wouldn't change that. And I can't change it, you know, like knowing what I know, knowing that they are not meant to be here. Even if I had have gotten the laser surgery and gone through all of that and birthed in the hospital and they hadn't have made it, like, first of all, I don't think I would be open to those messages. I would honestly have so much hate and so much like distrust in the system. Like, the story would be so different, you know. I would be so much more broken if that's the way that I walked. So I'm so grateful that I had such an incredible birth experience. And, you know, I look back and I'm like, oh, should have we called the ambulance? And you go through all of these thoughts, but it's just like, you can't change it. And you just have to like return to the love. And like, yeah, it's like, I feel like it's harder being in the love and being strong than turning around and blaming someone. And I spoke with my birth keeper on End about this, and she had, after my birth, she had two really hard births with women that were kind of blaming her for certain things. And she said to me, she was like, in a way, like, your birth was perfect. And I know, like, people will listen to that and be like, what the fuck? Like, no, it wasn't. But I didn't intervene with anything. Like, everything happened exactly as it should have happened. And because, like, we just have such a huge fear around death that, you know, I've found that people, they think that I did something really wrong. They think that I didn't try and save my children, that because I didn't have an ultrasound, like, I was the reason they didn't live. And like, that's the stuff that I ignore, because it's like, everything that I did was for my children, and it still is, you know? And yeah.
I mean, those are very, very, very captured people. You know, like, those people's opinions could not matter less.
Totally.
I'm not saying it's not fucking stingy to have, you know, gnats fly in your face, but they are so captured. And I totally hear your birth keeper's point. And, you know, this is a story, knowing their condition and knowing how serious it is and how just totally unlikely it is for souls inhabiting bodies like that in that dynamic to survive beyond birth, with or without that surgery. I mean, it is almost a clear, you know, sentence of not compatible with life, with being on the outside of your body. And I guess I just want to say that it's so obvious to me that you did right by your children. It's so obvious, you know, and it sounds also quite obvious that you know that, but I still want to say it, because your birth and your pregnancy were such a gift to your family and to these souls, you know, like, how sweet that they had so much consciousness to choose such a high vibrational mother and family that that they could on some level, you know, trust that you would give them the death that they came for, you know, the life that they came for. They were very alive inside of you and they lived a life and they lived a complete life cycle, shorter than what any mother would want, obviously. But at the same time, like objectively, it is a complete life cycle, right? And that they chose you and chose your womb to grow and for Melvin to die in is just such a high, high honor. I don't know how else to say it. You know, these are all very like taboo words and phrases to talk about this stuff, because obviously you and I don't come from this, but we come from a culture that says babies aren't supposed to die. And not just that babies aren't supposed to die, but also that death always has someone to blame and there's always a reason, and that death is wrong, right? It's that death is wrong and death is a punishment. And it's all very silly. It's all very low vibrational. And you know, I've been doing birth work for a very, very, very long time. And so death as a part of something women walk with and mothers walk with is just like very normal and doesn't make it less tragic or painful or anything like that, obviously. But my point is that you did have the perfect birth in that you claimed your space, you chose your pregnancy state, you loved your pregnancy, you chose a really peaceful family-centered birth in your home, surrounded by people that loved you and the people that touched your babies. You know, like it's as peaceful and loving as it gets. And if we zoom out and we go, okay, what if we knew that these babies were always coming to go, right? Which in a way, if you had gotten the scan or not gotten the scan, like that is what turns out to be true. And you would have had that information earlier. And like you said, I don't really see how that could have served you, because I don't think it's the kind of situation that would have likely resulted in survival or you know, thriving. Like, yeah, they would have gone to NICU. They probably would have died in NICU had they even been born alive, you know, at the time of the surgery. I mean, you know, like, come on. But the gifts of sitting in the mystery of your pregnancy, the gifts of your willingness to be in the mystery, didn't just give you the blissful pregnancy, but it allowed for you to give them the birth and then the death that they came for. And I hope you walk with that honor, because that's a high consciousness state to hold, and it's hard, and it's you know, like most people will not understand what we're talking about. And that's kind of a big thing to still hold your head up, you know, in spite of that, and to kind of find yourself on the other side of that, is a really big spiritual deal, though it sounds like you're really well supported. But you did right by those boys in every way, you know, and it says so much to me that you could feel his, like the placenta coming out, and you could feel his life force going. And then as he left your body, you know, that he was done. It just says in that, as painful as that is, there's also so much peace in that story. That's like, yeah, there wasn't anything to do. There just wasn't anything to do. You did it. You totally did what there was to do.
Yeah. And when I like deeply think about it, if I had have known that they weren't going to survive, I purposefully wouldn't change anything. I just would probably not call the ambulance. But then, you know, like if we had called the ambulance a little bit later and Dusty was fully not alive, then would that have been a way more suspicious case? You know what I mean? Like there's very just likely. Yeah, so. And I just think like that, like all they ever knew was love, like from conception to like the very last moment. And I feel like I was the vehicle for freeing them. That's what it feels like. It, even in the space, it didn't feel, I think people, and obviously like because of the way that we live, like people think death is just such this big messy emergency, whereas being in that space and witnessing what we all witnessed, it was so incredibly peaceful. It was like this there's only like one word to describe it. It's like it was like an act of God. And like, call it God, call it spirit, whatever you call it, like, that's what it felt like in that space. Like, it was like this holy experience. And I spoke to my birth keeper, like, when the ambos came in, it was like the syntheticness of their presence compared to what we were basking in. And like, you know, we were obviously trying to problem solve and try to save Dusty, but inherently, like, I couldn't switch into emergency mode because I feel like my intuition and my knowing was to bask in the peace of it because it was his last moments. Mm. And when they came in, it was like, it was just so synthetic, and we just saw this parallel universe kind of come together in the weirdest way. And yeah, in a way, like, I know that, like, I know I'm strong enough to go through this and share it in the hope that, you know, women do have more education on what happens when, you know, this kind of thing plays out. Like, unfortunately, we need to be somewhat prepared in death when we birth. And yeah,
and for anyone who doesn't know this, in the legal system, there's a really big difference between a baby born not alive, so a baby that it's defined by having taken a breath, and so a baby born stillborn, like Melvin was, in the free birth, you know, kind of world, from my understanding, around the world, really, it's usually handled pretty simply. But if you birth a baby that has life defined by breath, which Dusty obviously had, then that's a whole different world. And this particular baby was born alive, obviously. But also, I'm thinking of other stories I know where a baby could be born with a heartbeat, but not take a breath. And I can't speak for everywhere, but in the situations I've seen, that would still be considered stillborn because breath is life, right? Anyway, and so, yeah, that is an important piece around self-protection and engagement with the system, and something to know about and be smart about. Because then, I mean, if this isn't obvious, because then, like what Sally just hinted at, if they hadn't have called, then there's more of a potential case to create a picture of intentional manslaughter, of intentional murder, you know, is really what they would be looking at, as like fucked up as that is to even think about. But anyway, so, and like you said, again, this is just good information because death isn't talked about, you know, really anywhere at all. And I'll just speak about my country in the US, that any body from any age, baby or 80 years old, any body that dies outside of medical supervisement, there will be a case, there will be an investigation to make sure there's no funny business. So it's not specific to moms and babies. Any body that dies, you know, outside of medical institutions, there will be someone designated to look into why, and was it natural causes or was it not? Yeah. So I just, maybe that's just good information for everyone to have. Most babies, you know, at term, it is not very common. I mean, also I'll just say, because I know a lot of pregnant women listen to this. I mean, yes, stillbirths happen. Babies born alive that then die is very uncommon. This is a particular and quite rare situation in the situation that Sally described. But yeah, that's really quite an uncommon, very uncommon situation, that a baby would be born physiologically at term and then die so quickly. And so, in a way, I mean, it's a weird thing to say, it's good, it's not the right word, but I'm glad that you're aware of the condition and that you know about it. You know, I work with lots of bereaved moms who, you know, won't get that piece of information because it won't be obvious. You know, it will stay a mystery, as most fetal deaths are. Which, like, of course, you know, most autopsies will never render any information. That's another thing that you all listening should know. Very, very rarely does an autopsy of a fetal death show, or an infant death in this case, would show anything at all. So another reason to not do it if you can avoid it. I mean, that's just horrific. There's no words for the violation of not getting to choose what happens with your baby's bodies. And I am completely confident that it was punishment. Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it is. So it is like the battle of light and evil. I mean, it is, you know, like, this is an evil, evil, evil system at play. And it also has to be the place that we call to save our babies, which is like really fucking twisted.
It's wild. Yeah. It sucks that, you know, we've come so far from our natural beings that is what we rely on for help when we're in a state, you know. It's just, yeah, there's no words to describe it, really. It's just, it's really wrong.
Yeah. But the point you made, I do think, is quite valid around, had you not called, how the optics of that would have played. I don't think they would have played in your favor, which would have been one more thing to navigate.
Yeah.
Have you looked into, kind of the last thing on my mind is, have you looked into, I'd just be curious about any legal repercussions of the ambulance, the confidentiality and like HIPAA compliance, you know, total violation. Maybe at the end of the day, what, you get them fired? Okay.
Yeah.
You could get some money.
I mean, I could totally go there. Like, I've spoken to my death doula and she was like, you've got a case. But for me, it's like, all I'm doing is like trying to beat the man and I'm going to get some money, you know? And yeah.
Money's
but
chill.
It's just, it's not worth it for me. Like, I would, if I can change one person's mind and turn them onto free birth and turn them into the love, I've done my job, you know? And so that's my focus. Like, if I go down that road of going into the system and fighting the system, which I know I can, like, I have the strength and I think I have the intelligence to be able to do that, to take them down, and I have the support to do it. But vibrationally, it's not like, it's a fucking waste of energy for me. Like, it's like I'm getting into a suit and going into a courtroom. Like, I'm going back to the Mordor of where it all, you know. And
I guess the only like thing I'd argue is, if you could find an attorney to do it on contingency, you know, meaning that you don't pay them, they would take a percent of your winnings, you know, they do most of the work. Like,
yeah,
there's some stuff you'd have to participate in, but yeah, I totally hear you vibrationally. I totally
hear
you. But I do also think there is a way to play the game and come back to Mordor and play it with your army and your resources, and also fuck you. And thank you for the, you know, 600 grand that I'm going to get from you. You know, I don't know. I'm just saying.
I mean,
ambulance services make a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, if someone is listening to this and wants to go, like, yeah, I would explore it. Yeah. I think, you know, we're still in the grief stage, and we've only just gotten to a place where the media's kind of died down and we don't have that external noise affecting us. And our lives, you know, like, my connection with my son and my partner, and, you know, I quit my business that I've been running for 4 years. I stepped down as director. I just, anything that is not aligned, is done for me. And, you know, I'm just in a place of, like, I'm really loving life. And my boys have gifted me that. Like, prior to them, I was, like, grind. Like, I'm really creative. I was, like, setting up two restaurants, like, just nonstop. And I think after, you know, everything that's happened, I just have realized, like, that's not the life for me. And it's been my life for, you know, 30-odd years. So to have such a huge shift and a revelation and to really be just opening to the gift of, like, relaxing and being present goes to go back into the system and to fight it. Oh, like, I'm exhausted even just thinking about it. But you never know. Like, yeah, my death doula said to me, she was like, this is some kind of sacrifice. Like, there's something coming good from this. And she was kind of saying, like, you know, you do have a case and I'll back you, because I've never seen anything like this before. And the hospital really did stuff up. The nurse on, or the social worker didn't sign off on our papers. So the boys were sitting there for like a week and they don't have the facilities to keep them cold enough. So yeah, there's so much like error in the medical system with what we went through that I definitely could fight it, but maybe another time.
Yeah. I mean, and that stuff I think would be harder to get. Well, not necessarily, but you're talking about multiple different suits actually, because the ambulance, you know, media leak.
Oh yeah.
Is a very specific one. And then there's the, you know, fuckery with the morgue and, you know, where were your legal rights, you know, with the coroner stuff. And then, you know, da, 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 da. There's multiple different stuff, but also I'll shut up about it after this, but also what if this shit got settled quickly, you know, like you keep framing as like this big fight, but like, that's not necessarily, and I'm not trying, I mean, whatever, do whatever's right for you, obviously. I just like want you to get some money or something. Fuck. It's just so many different things, you know, that were so wrong. But I mean, obviously I'm not familiar with your country like I am with mine, but I've certainly known you know, women to get settlements. They don't go far. It's not like the it's not justice. It's not like that. It's settlements to get them off
money.
I mean, shit. So when did you birth your boys? What month was it?
The 11th of February.
Okay. Oh yeah, it's still so fresh. Damn, man, just like fucked over by the system, two births in a row.
Yeah. And it's just like, we free birth to get out. Mm-hmm. And we just got so deep. But I mean, like, me and my partner, we're both like Aries. We find the humor in it all, you know. We really do come back to just trying to enjoy this life that we have. We both had really similar upbringings of, you know, being I don't know, like, not, we were both really different as teenagers, and we were battling, you know, what our family thought we should be. And we've both seen really dark kind of times. So yeah, for us, like, we are just so grateful that we have our son, that we have each other, that we have our family. Like, we have so much community support. Like, yeah, like, we really do just turn to that. And like, yeah, it's not easy, of course, but yeah,
it did not, and it will not break you.
No, I nearly did.
Yeah, I bet. Well, obviously, it's one thing to lose your babies, full stop. Then it's a whole nother thing to experience months of harassment and slander and actual, like, pretty haunting violations with the coroner.
Yeah, that process, it was actual torture. Mm-hmm. And I think because of my, you know, I never really got to say goodbye to Melvin. So much of me wanted to be able to see him again. And by the time that they got back to our death doula, the coroner called us and said, I'm highly advising you not to see them because of the state that they are in. And I want to give like Haley from Paperbark a little shout out, our death doula. She was just absolutely incredible. You know, she wrapped them so lovingly and had them in this cocoon of flowers. And I walked into that space and it was just like, oh, like this is what it's meant to be. Like, I thought I was going to go in and be a blubbering mess, but I was actually just like, oh, I can finally peacefully like give my children one more physical goodbye. And when I was standing in that space holding them and, you know, saying my last goodbyes, it was almost like I could feel them like snickering at me or laughing at me and being like, Mom, like, we're not there.
So yeah, you were saying, I mean, I would love to hear you just kind of close with this funeral service that you all had, because I'm also thinking about, I mean, you said it was six, how many days that you got their bodies back? Like how did that all go, seeing them, and were they totally wrapped up?
Yeah, they were completely cocooned. So we couldn't see any part of their skin. And Haley said, like, she was like, you know, they've been through a lot. And she was like, she said, she was like, she goes, I keep going, like, then she said their spirit is almost like they're not babies. She's like, they're like wise old men. She was like, yeah, and she just wrapped them so lovingly. They were in this cocoon of flowers. And just that last moment was so how it's meant to be. It's not meant to be, it's not meant to be medical. It's sacred. It's supposed to be like honored and revered and beautiful. So yeah, I was so grateful to have that in the final moments. And yeah, we had them cremated and sent home with us, and yeah, that kind of wrapped up all of their kind of like physicalness. We got the placenta back, which was also an absolute shit fight to get it back. And yeah, buried it in the backyard and had a fire over the ground and then planted a tree. So I've really sealed them in the earth. Yeah. And my placenta was like, it was like a world. It was huge. So yeah, it felt so good to finally have that back, although it was frozen, like wrapped in plastic. And yeah, still to get it back, you know, was such a struggle. They really didn't want to give it back.
No. I'm proud of you, sister.
Thank you. And thank you for, you know, doing what you do. Honestly, I wouldn't have, yeah, I don't know if free birth would be what it is without you. So yeah, thank you for just trailblazing.
We get to meet someday.
Likewise. Yeah, come to Australia.
Yeah, I'll say it like you guys, I reckon I will.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course, our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive, private, vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention, death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back from the stars.